Hey all, thank you for tuning into Women Birders Happy Hour. My name is Hannah. I'm a birder, a woman, and someone that enjoys a good drink after a long day of birding. Women have been integral to birding since it started, but we haven't always been recognized for the contributions and impact we have. Men have dominated the guiding seed, festival circuit, leadership positions, and publications. And according to a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service 2011 report, there are over 47 million birders in the U.S., the majority of whom are college educated, the majority of whom are white, the majority of whom are women, and the majority of birders are over 55. And pulling these factors together, this is a demographic I see birding frequently, but usually only as a token speaker, guide, or sole publisher, not to mention the whole spectrum of women, BIPOC, and LGBTQ+ birders. So in this show, I'm asking everyday women from all walks of life to join me to bring more voices into the community. We talk about experiences, resources, and advice for others. And I want you to remember that just because you haven't experienced some of these things doesn't mean they aren't real issues that others face. And I also create a unique cocktail for each guest in case you want to mix yourself a drink and join us for this chat. So we're just about to get into the holiday season, and with the COVID pandemic raging in many places, I hope you're all safe, well, and able to get out and see some birds. There have been some really interesting sightings around the U.S. and North America, including several snowy owls that are being seen in different places and an elegant trogon in South Texas. So there's lots to see and lots to do. Hopefully the weather is holding out for some birding opportunities for you. And I hope you do get a chance to enjoy family, whether it's on Zoom or on the phone or in person, if you can do so safely. So in this episode, I chatted with Orietta Estrada, who I first became aware of because of the Black and Latinx Birders Annual Scholarship that was recently created with the Maryland Bird Conservation Partnership. Orietta is a writer and photographer that works in bird conservation and is a force to be reckoned with for creating equity in the birding community. She has written as a columnist, created content for organizations, among other things that she has done in her career. And she has great advice for everyone. So get your notepad ready. But first off, let's talk about the drink. So one of the birds she has had the pleasure to see is an American woodcock, which is a species that many people want to see, including myself. They're very well camouflaged bird. They're a brown mottled shorebird that moves slowly along the forest floor, which is very unlike your other typical shorebirds that you might see that live near shorelines and water. These birds live in young forests and fields. With their long bill, they probe the soil searching for earthworms, and they're particularly difficult birds to find because of their cryptic plumage and secretive behavior, but they're easiest to spot at dawn or dusk in the breeding season when males show off for females through an aerial display and their call, which is a nasally peep. They are found in the eastern half of the U.S., which is fun to look at their range map because there's like a very defined line through the middle of the country that they are just found on that eastern half. They're renowned for the odd placement of their eyes, which are large and positioned high and near the back of their skull, which helps them to keep an eye on the sky for danger while feeding for earthworms. And I think they have some of the best nicknames, including Timberdoodle and Bogsucker, which both sound, well, Timberdoodle sounds like a cute kind of dog, and Bogsucker sounds like some sort of insult. So here is how you make your American woodcock. It starts off with an ounce of vodka, an ounce of hazelnut liqueur, an ounce of coffee liqueur, an ounce of half and half, and then caramel syrup. So first off, you'll take your old-fashioned glass and drizzle it with caramel sauce and fill it with ice. In a shaker, mix together the vodka, hazelnut liqueur, coffee liqueur, and half and half with ice. So you shake, shake, shake. And then pour it into the prepared glass and top with caramel sauce. And you can even garnish it with a gummy worm if you would like. This delicious cocktail actually tastes a bit like an alcoholic chocolate milk, which doesn't really sound good at first, but it's really tasty and it kind of grows on you. It's creamy, flavorful, and represents an American woodcock with its cryptic coloration. It has those rich browns and caramel buffy underside. And if you wish, that gummy worm represents their main food source, earthworms. It's a great cocktail to enjoy at dusk with the coffee pick-me-up and hope to hear that familiar peent of a woodcock. So kick back, grab a drink and enjoy this interview with Orietta. Orietta, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Women Birders Happy Hour. Please, would you tell me who you are?
Yeah, so my name is Orietta Estrada, or Orietta Estrada. My pronouns are she, her, ella. I'm a freelance media and content creator, and I am co-chair of the Black and Latinx Birders Scholarship and co-creator of Idea Birders of Maryland and DC.
Oh, wow, that's a lot. So where exactly do you live then?
So I live in Maryland. I was born and raised in Virginia, and I've lived all over the place, but I live in Maryland now. Maryland is home base.
And how long have you been birding, and how did you start birding?
So I've been a birder for about 10 years, but birding has always been a part of my life. My childhood was very much spent in the woods, climbing trees, not answering my mom when she would call for me to come home in the evening. And I spent a lot of time in Latin America with my family. My mother is Venezuelan and my dad is Cuban. So I've had really nice experiences with birds throughout my life. Unfortunately, though, not as a birder. but it all kind of started when I traded my city life for my current country life. And it really picked up when I was pregnant and on bed rest. So my life was my partner, my baby, the birds, my dogs, and Discovery ID.
So did you have like a window that, you know, just looked out over to the trees and you could enjoy that while you're on bed rest?
Yeah. So like any like trip to the kitchen or anything, like anytime I was on my feet, I always just kind of like leaning against the window frame, just kind of like scoping out the birds. And like my husband bought me a pair of binoculars and I had a DSLR, and I spent a lot of time learning about bluebirds and learning just you know, the landscape and noticing where the birds were hanging out, like which kind of birds, like thrashers, were hanging out in the shrubs versus versus other.
Other birds. Do you just have one kid or do you have more than the one?
I have one. I have one kid.
Yeah. Are they a birder?
Yes. So it's interesting. She goes through phases. So there are phases where she's like really excited to go birding with me. And then other times where it's just like, I don't want to go with you. And I'm like, okay, well, I have to go see this Connecticut warbler and I need you to come with me. So I have some candy. Like, do you like candy? Good. Okay. Well, come with me and I'll give you the candy. But then, you know, when we're out in the field, she's like having a great time. I let her hold my phone and do eBird for me. You know, she finds interesting things that are like close to the ground because she's closer to the ground than I am. So, you know, she gets real excited about everything that's out there. So
have you,
yeah, she loves it, but you know,
have you started her with her own iNaturalist account?
No, I have not. Oh. I have not. And actually I haven't thought about doing that. I should totally
do that.
Yeah, I mean,
if she's like 3 feet down, I mean, think of all the amazing things she could probably spot while she's looking
down.
Oh
my gosh. She finds the neatest things. She found a frog with one eye and a sealed mouth. It was like the most, I'll tweet it. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. She finds like all sorts of neat bugs, like weevils and beetles and things like that.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Thank
You're
you.
So what has been your most memorable bird or birding experience that you've had?
So this is a hard question to answer. I'm the kind of person where if you were to ask me like what my favorite bird is, I would have to just say, I would have to like make one up because I love all of them. But I really like birding in the dark. So I love birding at dusk. I love birding at dawn or before dawn. You know, I'm the kind of person who I like to hear like the owls at night, and I like that like chilling feeling of hearing coyotes that are nearby. Like I love... That's the kind of excitement I like. And I, you know, I know some people might feel scared in the dark, but I find it very peaceful and very soothing. So I would have to say that one of my favorite birding experiences was when I was standing in like a wide opening between like two forest fragments. And in between the forest fragments were like a lot of brambles and just like shrubs and a mess of like leaf litter all over the place. I don't know how many white-crowned sparrows were singing, but they were like everywhere and they were so loud. And I'm not kidding. Like I'm just going to say maybe there are like thousands. I don't know, but it was enough to make you want to go like, shh, you know, and I don't often feel that way about birds. Like as soon as the light just disappeared from the horizon and everything, like all you could see were like silhouettes of trees and whatnot, you could just feel them flying past you. And it was woodcock. It was American woodcock taking flight. And, you know, again, I couldn't really see a lot because it was that kind of weird time right after sundown where there's still like a little bit of light left, but it's hard to focus your eyes. So I could only see like their silhouettes like pairing and crisscrossing. But I heard them their peents, the peent, you know, they're so funny. You know, they crack you up, but then like the sound of like the wind in their wings, it's just, it's magic. It was really a magical experience.
That sounds incredible. Yeah. So where did that happen? Was that in Maryland?
Yeah, it was in Maryland.
I'm gonna have to go see you and have that experience.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. If you come out to Maryland, we will go birding. Yes.
Sounds good. So have you had any influences from like mentors or books or documentaries that other people should be aware of?
I've been really fortunate enough to have some good influences in my birding life. The Feminist Bird Club leadership has been very inspirational to me. Also, the ABA leadership has been supportive of me and my birding. And more recently, the creators of Black Birders Week have just been a massive, massive inspiration and just a great source of hope for the future of birding. And a true point of reference for the rest of us about, you know, what we can accomplish as birders and conservationists in the field. Lately, a lot of my birding has been influenced and shaped by younger millennials and Gen Zers. I'm an older millennial, but on the cusp of 40, but really like the younger millennials and the Gen Zers, they've given me a lot of joy and have really helped me evaluate why I am a birder. You know, I like to say I'm a reformed lister, The new school of birding, as I like to call it, has really helped me let go of my obsession with listing. I'd like to say I've outgrown it, but like it's not true. Like I very much have like the urge to list birds like all the time. I might not walk around my house with bins around my neck all the time. So I mean, you never know what you're gonna see. I had evening grosbeak at my finger yesterday randomly. So, you know, you never know. I love chasing birds. I love hitting the road, but I am more focused now on my community. I am more focused on bird conservation in this younger generation. And I think my priorities are a lot less self-centered and they're healthier and I'm a lot happier.
That's good. Yeah. And I think that's kind of an evolution a lot of birders go through, you know, like you start off and you're just really excited about like bird, bird, bird. And then as you get more like integrated into the community, it's like, well, what can I do for others? And yeah, I think there's definitely like a progression that I've never seen like a chart, you know, how they have like life cycles of different things. They have the life cycle of tourism.
The life cycle of birders. Exactly. Yeah.
I'll have to make that.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. I mean, like even what you're doing with this podcast is probably, you know, an evolution of your birding experience,
yeah,
right?
That's a good point. So do you feel that you found your place in the birding community?
You know, that's That's a very interesting question. I'm not sure. I'm really focused on community building, but I don't know if I found my place in the birding community. I don't know if that makes sense. Like right now, I'm trying to find my place in bird conservation and creating spaces for equity in the birding community and outreach. And I'm hyper focused on climate change and supporting other people, again, that younger generation, and even younger than that, my daughter's generation. But have I found my place in the birding community? I'm not sure. I don't know how, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe somebody can tell me if I have a place in the birding community. I'm not sure.
No, and that's definitely a hard question. But yeah, I guess it's more like, have you reached a place and are you happy with it? Or do you see yourself progressing like outside of, bird conservation at some point in time?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've used birding as like a platform to kind of like hop off and to get into like bird conservation and also like community
Sure.
building. So I think that is like my progression. And I guess with the Idea Birders of Maryland and DC, and IDEA stands for inclusivity, diversity, equity, and accessibility. I guess through co-creating that and building up that community, I think my place is just in the community and just being like a facilitator, and just being like a
Yeah.
cheerleader and a supporter and sharing any resources that I can share.
And I think
So,
that's a really
yeah.
important place. I mean, we definitely need people like that and like you to go out there and, be our cheerleader and like we can do better
Yeah.
and, here's how we can
Yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
when you first
There's a lot to do.
no.
Sorry, go ahead.
When you first started birding, do you feel that you were able to find like resources, like places to go, place how to find bird ID, or do you feel like you were just kind of swimming in the void and unable to find what to do?
Yeah, so when I first started getting really into birding, I was like a little embarrassed. Like my friends were like, why, like my non-birding friends were like, why are you like so into birds now? Like what's with the birds? And I'm like, how can you like not be into birds? Like I just what? Like I no comprendo, you know, I don't understand. Yeah, Facebook was a place that helped me get started. There I met somebody named Donna Cole, who has done excellent work in reporting on lead poisoning, and reporting on the killing of bald eagles in Maryland. And she found me and gave me oh, you know what? She found me on Twitter because I had tweeted about a snowy owl near my home. And then she led me to Facebook, and then getting involved with the Facebook groups, that really helped. And then when I did a big year in 2018, Jim Brighton, Marsha Balestri, and Kathy Calvert were just they're pillars of the bird and Maryland birding community. They just reached out to me and helped me find resources and get the skinny on like good places to go birding. So
Was that a Maryland big year or was it nationwide?
it was a Maryland big year, and with one bird in Virginia.
That really count though?
I mean, it was so close. It was so close. And it was in my home county, like where I was born and raised, so I was pretty stoked. It was a northern
Oh,
shrike.
nice.
So
That's my current
yeah.
nemesis bird.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Those folks that reach out to you and, invited you into the community. So it was mostly through Facebook that you reached them, or was it like a listserv or just
It
connections?
was it was through Facebook. Jim had reached out to me, and then he hooked me up with Marsha, and I spent a day with Marsha and just like became a better birder like within hours. And then Marsha hooked me up with Kathy, and Kathy and I are great friends, and we do a lot of birding together, and we go on trips and things like that.
Oh, that's
So,
awesome.
yeah,
So,
yeah.
what advice would you have for other women birders that are getting started, or what's something you wish you would have known when you started birding?
I think seeking out people who share your values is really important. When you're getting started in something that you don't really have a lot of connections in, make mistakes and make peace with making mistakes. And also, listen to birders who are even newer than you. I think it's really important to teach healthy, positive birding habits. There's a lot of toxic behavior out there, a lot of toxic birding behavior. For example, when I was doing my big year, somebody asked me what my goal was. And I thought I had a pretty robust goal for a full-time working parent. but this person, another woman actually, just totally shut me down and was like, "Oh, I do that in a year easily." And I was like, "Oh, okay. I won't be talking to you again." Like, I know you're not interested in my big year. That's okay. I'm just gonna like move on. But like, that's the kind of, if I was somebody different, maybe that would have shut me down or made me feel bad. And it did make me feel bad, but it didn't shut me down. I think another piece of advice I would give is don't mistake being inclusive for being inexperienced. I think that's another piece of advice. And I guess for myself, something I would have done differently is I wish I would have taken myself less seriously when I started. I kind of joke about like obsessively listing, but it's kind of a joke, but it's also like not a joke when you can't sleep because you're thinking about your list and the birds that you don't have yet, that you need, that you want. There's a fine line there. But yeah, I took myself too seriously when I first started. But I felt that, as a Latina in a white dominated space, that I had to bring my A game always, and had to justify why I was in a certain area, why I was invited to like a on a special trip. My mentor, Kathy Calvert, she really helped me move past a lot of that. So yeah.
Do you ever feel that she had to like vouch for you out in the field?
I have felt like that. She's had to remind me that I deserve to be in a certain space, that it was okay for me to be there. It never felt like I could just be a birder without saying, "Oh, well, I'm on the board of this," or "I'm also the editor of this publication," or this is what I'm doing and how I'm contributing. It wasn't like I could just like show up out of nowhere and then just be given access to what everybody else is having access to. Like I always had to have some kind of like reason or somebody vouching for me, which is frustrating. And that's one of the reasons why, back to idea birders, the whole point of that is to give people of all levels equal opportunities for experiences. I mean, we don't know if the new birder is going to be the person who solves problems for wind turbines or whatever. We don't know what that person is going to become. So, we shouldn't be shutting anybody out.
I
So,
totally
yeah.
agree. What does a day of birding look like for you?
So my ideal day of birding is different than my actual day of birding. So my ideal day of birding starts in the dark, it starts in the dark. It starts with a loose itinerary. I don't like rushing anything when it comes to birding, which is why like I 9 times out of 10 drive myself places. I know that's like not the most eco-friendly, but like I'm not a person whose feelings are going to be hurt if somebody's like, "Oh, well, I really want to go here." And I'm like, "Oh, well, I'm going to stay here." Unless we're sharing a car, then it becomes a problem. So I like to drive myself places. But I really cherish being independent and I cherish solitude. And I'm the kind of birder that if I have to spend 8 hours in a blind waiting for something to show up, that's what I'm going to do. So yeah, I guess my ideal day of birding is a loose itinerary with a lot of time on my hands. My actual day of birding looks a little bit like sneaking out of the house before everybody's awake, getting back at breakfast time. Pre-COVID, I have like a circuit that I drive for every errand, everywhere, like grocery store, doctor's appointments, dentist appointment. So I have that little circuit that I do. So I'm always birding, like weddings, birding, on the phone, talking to someone, looking outside with my
Sure.
binoculars.
Yeah.
So
That's it's
yeah.
super obnoxious to talk to me or Eric on the phone because, we're just that's why we prefer
Yeah.
texting. Well, that sounds that yeah, your whole day of birding starting at dusk or in dawn and getting out there sounds wonderful. I hope you get a chance to do that pretty often.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to things calming down with the pandemic, so I'll have more flexibility. It's a bit of a challenge now that we have our kids at home learning. And I say our kids, I mean like all birders with children. because, when my daughter's at school, I mean it's like the perfect time for me to go birding. I work from home. So it's easy for me to rearrange my schedule and just be like, ooh, I'm going to take like a 2 hour lunch and I'll make it up at the end of the day. Now that's it's like, I either have to have her miss class, like I did for the Connecticut Warbler. I hope her teacher's not listening. It's pre-dawn birding and getting back before school starts. So yeah.
So, what can we as more experienced women birders do to be more supportive and foster other birders?
Yeah, so I think that attitudes need to continue to change. There has been like a lot of great work done. I mean, your podcast is a testament to that, right? But like, there's no more trash birds. There's no more gatekeeping or hiding birds from beginner birders because they haven't earned the cred necessary to get the details about a rarity. That's again one of the reasons why I co-created IDEA Birders with Lynn Parks, and we have a lot of support also from Danny Sloan. We want beginner birders to have the same access as experienced birders, and I'm proof that you can think you belong to a community of birders for a long time, serve on boards, commit countless hours to keeping that community together via news, but still get shut out of a lot. And I really feel like the era of elitism in birding is coming to a close, but also that those who would consider themselves elitists, if they love birds and they want to attract people to birds as a gateway to conversation, sorry, conservation, they must come forward to nurture, the younger generation and to not just nurture the younger generation, but also teach healthy birding habits. So.
And I really hope that elitism, we can, I don't want to say weed those people out and get them out of here.
No, definitely. They have a role to play,
Exactly.
a big role
I
to
just hope
play.
that we
Yeah.
can re-educate, some of those behaviors and prevent them from happening. I mean, I had a I talked about on our other podcast. I had this horrible conversation with this guy on Facebook about he was calling birders that misidentified something idiots. And I
Oh,
called him out and said, like, that's not really appropriate behavior. And then he just attacked me about the whole thing. And I was just trying to get him to be like a good person about it. And like,
no.
I mean, sure, you can think they're idiots to yourself, but when you say that you think that, yeah, that's tearing people out of the community. And I think we need to build other people and, if they're misidentifying, educate them. And if they're not gonna, give up about their sighting and say, no, it's really this, then, I mean, I guess at some point you have to walk away.
Yeah, I agree. And, I kind of want to make this point, like, in terms of calling people names or calling people out in harsh ways. And, then there's the other side of that gossip, is that, that is a form of discrimination. It is a direct form of discrimination by isolating people and with the intention or, or inadvertently, taking them out of a community that they're trying to be a part of. This is birding. Like, what are we doing? We're like looking at
Really?
birds and counting birds. Like, everybody calm down and let's be here for the birds and hopefully do some good work in conservation.
I feel like we need that on a shirt. Just calm down. We're here for the birds.
Yeah, everybody chill.
So, do you think, I mean, you kind of already hit on this, but does anything need to change to create a more welcoming, inclusive community? And you're doing a lot for that already, but is there anything, the broader community that's listening to us can do?
I think sharing resources is really important. Everybody has some kind of resource, whether you just know a lot about birds, or you have money, or you have connections or friends who are ornithologists, or even friends who are not in the ornithology field but are in like adjacent fields. There are a lot of birders out there, in different areas of work in different fields. And I think that by helping to build more robust networks and helping others with resources, that goes a long way. There are a lot of volunteer opportunities as well. Unfortunately, there aren't many paid opportunities, but there are a lot of volunteer opportunities. I know that there are organizations who really rely on people giving their time. Do some research about some organizations out there. See if there's an area of expertise that you might have that you'd be willing to lend your time out time to, and think about becoming a mentor. That's another important thing that we all can do. Because yeah, it's not really for my generation, it's not really about us anymore. It's about everybody after us. So we have a lot to pay forward. So
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. Do you have any last things that we didn't touch that you'd like to bring up, or how can people find out more about you and what you do?
well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to be on your podcast. I'm a fan. So if anybody's interested in finding out more about the scholarship, the web address is marylandbirds.org/grants. And you can find us on Twitter and on Instagram, and we are at Birders Fund.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for all you do. And it was a pleasure getting to know you. And I hope to be out in Maryland sometime to meet you and bird with you and see woodcocks.
Oh, it would be great. I'd love to take you birding.
Thank you to Orietta for joining me for this episode. I think there's so much that we can take away from what you've said about gatekeeping, being good stewards of birding, and how to create more inclusive spaces. And thank you all for listening to my podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe learned something. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Music, anywhere else you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to connect with me on socials, please follow me at Hannah Goes Birding on Instagram. My Twitter is at WomenBirdersHH, or you can email me at womenbirders@gmail.com. I also have resources and information on GoBirdingPodcast.com, as well as all the recipes from the drinks that I have made that I have updated. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to seeing you at the next happy hour. And you have a wonderful and safe holiday season, and we'll see you again soon.